Ms. Cato.
Mr. Speaker, from yea to nay.
From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
20 yeas, 18 nays.
The amendment to rescind has failed. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we move up the calendar to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a great deal of pleasure introducing a young businessman in my community. He is the regional manager of Western States Optical, doing business as Vista Optical in the state of Alaska. His name is Greg McClenahan. Gallery A. Also, Mr. Speaker, Greg has informed me that he is blessed today to have the presence of his mother with him, Mrs. Patricia Seavey.
Yes. Representative Frank, we're under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, there's an old friend of mine from Fairbanks, Pete Egan.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Copeland.
I notice Carl Armstrong of the Tenino Valley Fair in Gallery B, too.
Any further guests for introduction? We have before us the bill in third reading. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent. I'll just move, Mr. Speaker, that we return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment, the specific amendment being number 22 that I believe is on all members' desks.
And are there any objections? Hearing objections, Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I really don't think this should be controversial, although in a bill like this, everything is, of course. All this is doing is putting in clear English what we're meaning when we say nutrition and hydration. I don't think an awful lot of people, most would probably know, perhaps a little bit over 50%, but I don't think an awful lot of people know what nutrition and hydration means. And, I think a lot of folks might think that nutrition means, you know, like vitamins. And hydration, I think there's a lot of people would just draw a complete blank on what that means. So when people are filling out these documents, I think they at least ought to know that depending on which box they choose, they may be choosing not to receive food and water. And it's just in keeping, I think, with this legislature's consistent effort to make legal jargon as plain English as possible.
The motion before us is to move back from third to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the bill is before us in second reading. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment number 22 by M.M. Miller and Phillips. Page 2, line 6, after hydration, add, in parentheses, food and water.
Representative Miller.
Sir, I ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Are there any objections to the adoption of amendment number 22?
Objection.
Hearing question. Objections.
Question.
I'm ready for the question. Question is, shall amendment number 22 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
29 yeas, 10 nays.
Amendment number 22 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Is there any debate?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin.
I don't think we should be so quick to pass this bill without some really serious thoughts about it. Number one, we're talking about what we consider today as terminal illness and irreversible diseases. And I think many of us see day by day the modern successes of modern medicine, the almost unbelievable success that we are having for those people who care and those people who want to prolong their living experience in this world. Just yesterday, it has come out, one of the most dreadful diseases in our country today is considered AIDS. And now we suddenly realize a number of doctors and a number of physiologists and other people finding out we can cure AIDS without any modern drugs. But we do need nutrition, and we do need positive thinking of that individual for their health. Right now, when a person is told they had AIDS or conquered AIDS or suddenly have been found with it, there's a tremendous depression. They give up everything and feel that they just have lost it. No matter what their lifestyle is, they feel there's no way to recuperate. Well, now we find it is. It used to be the same way with cancer, the same way with leukemia. And both those diseases of the past that were considered terminal and everyone gave up hope. But there was others who had hope. Where there was life, they felt we can keep on working and help that individual as long as they want to survive. Preconceiving that you get a certain disease, even diseases tomorrow that we may not know of, and then suddenly someone tells you there's no hope, it's a negative aspect. Everyone should be encouraged to think positive about their life. Even if they have one more day left, they may have something worthwhile to experience. Except even experiencing the new drugs that they have to work on them and say, because I offered myself, that someone else in a year or in a week or whatever time down the road, others will succeed because I allow myself to have this new experimental drugs. But I'm going to specifically talk about nutrition. In AIDS, we find out now, all of a sudden, that of your blood cells, it's the white blood cells that have been deteriorated. And you have three basic blood white cells, two stimulants and one is a depressor to help carry and produce the fluids that we need throughout our body, whether it be oxygen or trace minerals or whatever to keep the human body going. In AIDS, this virus attacks one of those positive white blood cells. Now we're finding out that although it may have taken a year or 2 years for that person's body to completely deteriorate and become deficient of immunity abilities to produce itself, now by giving a master's dosage of vitamin C and vitamin A and vitamin D, within a relatively short period of time, the individual can gain hope and certainly gain full life value, strictly through nutrition. And we get them out and we make them do exercises. We encourage them, a positive encouragement. And we're finding success now in this most dreaded disease of AIDS, only because there are those who felt nutrition or there is a way to answer this problem. But what about if a person who has been, for some reason or other, convinced to sign a document a year ago or 5 years ago, and when they're in this depressed mode, they forgot about that, or maybe they may become unconscious for a while, and they can't speak to someone. Doctors tell me in a seminar I went to, even though that person cannot speak verbally, they know when that person is fighting for life, and they know that that person is making facial motions, making eye movements, or even the feeling of their hands, that they're grasping for life, whether it be one more day or one more hour, no matter what piece of paper they signed a year ago or 5 years ago. And I think we ought to give serious consideration to this bill as much as possible and do what we can, what we know today is available, to encourage people who might think of signing these documents to make sure that it's a document that allows them all the option at the last minute of life. This document that we are prescribing in law here does not do it. And I think that we are very deficient in that aspect of nutrition and water and oxygen, and we should not pass the bill.
Representative Gall.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say why I'm going to vote for the bill. I believe that as a patient under a doctor's care, I have a right to give instructions to my physician or to ask that physician to withhold care from me. And if I cannot communicate verbally and wish to communicate in writing, I think that should be my right under the law. It's for that reason I support this legislation.
I'm ready for the question.
The question is,
shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 140, Judiciary Amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk will lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
28 yeas, 11 nays.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 140, Judiciary Amended House, has passed the House on reconsideration. Representative Clark.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the roll call vote on final passage of Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 140 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing objection, Representative Martin, we're ready
for
the question.
Thank you. So the reason why I object is that I want a clarification on its effective date clause and if at all it is possible for people who do choose to sign such documents to do it within a short period of time, and also for the hospital administrators who must conform to these bills or these documents. It seems to me that just 90 days may be inappropriate for such a important issue of this, and perhaps a later effective date would be much more reasonable in allowing our medical professions and our law profession to adjust to this bill, and especially if there's certain forms and that have to be considered legal. Just 90 days seems awful short for these professional people to adjust to such a bill.
Right. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt the effective date clause? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
35 yeas, 4 nays.
Effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Jenkins be excused from the call of the House Monday until plain time.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. We are going into the limbo file.
Just take a second.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, in the limbo file, there is a letter of intent to accompany Committee Substitute for House Bill 530, Loans Amended. Senate has passed the House version of that bill but has adopted a letter of intent. The letter of intent is in your limbo file. It's been reviewed by the sponsor of the legislation who supports the letter of intent. I move at this time that the House concur in the Senate letter of intent to accompany Committee Substitute for House Bill 530, Loans Amended.
Ready for the question. The question is, shall the House concur in the letter of intent to House Bill 530? Members may proceed to vote.
Didn't work. Is this not working?
I'm pretty lucky.
There it is.
Has any member failed to vote? Representative Navarre? Is there any other member that's not shown on the board? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
39 yeas, no nays.
The House concurs in the letter of intent to House Bill 530. We're still under unfinished business. Any further unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Furness?
Speaker, we have a brief at ease, please.
Would the House please stand at ease? The House come back to order. We are still under announcements, under unfinished business. Any further unfinished business to come before this body? Announcements of standing or special committees. Representative Boucher.
Speaker, the House Special Committee on Telecommunication is recessed. We have several important pieces of work, and I would like to have the members there on Monday after session at Representative Collins' office so we can get these important pieces of legislation moved on. Monday after session, please.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Hess Committee, there are a couple of corrections to the calendar for today. On Wednesday, March the 19th, we will not hear House Bill 641 regarding the Board of Pharmacy because we dealt with the bill yesterday and voted it out. Secondly, for the purposes of scheduling only, I'm putting on for that day House Bill 614, the Board of Dentistry. We may not actually take it up that day, but at least it's scheduled and it's meeting the rules. Secondly, on Thursday, March the 20th, they have listed on the calendar House Bill 688, Tax Credits Contribution to Higher Education, as a first hearing. That's not the first hearing. We've already heard the bill, and the asterisk should be disregarded. Thank you.
Representative Sun, committee announcements.
Yeah, the House Special Committee on Loans will not be meeting next week. We've had a request from the APA. They have unable to attend our Monday and Tuesday meeting. And also House Bill 699, which just came across today. We haven't got proper five-day notice to have it up. So we will not be having a Loans Committee meeting next week.
Representative Martin, did you have a question as to an announcement?
Yes, sir. Just point of information with the Hess Committee Chairman. 614 was one in. That's the first hearing on that particular bill, sir?
No, it's not, Mr.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No, it's not. We've already held a hearing, and as a matter of fact, the bill's in the subcommittee now.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements? Representative Taylor.
I just thought I'd mention that since both the co-chairs are going to be gone in the Hess Committee, I'll be chairing that committee for both Monday and Tuesday, and anyone who has some creative ideas within the rules on how I can move a few things through there while they're out of town should please let me know.
Any further announcements? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I've been asked to ask, I'm the guilty one, but I've been asked by others to remind you that there are some members that have difficulty hearing if you don't speak directly into your microphone, and that during debate, if you will do that and not turn away from the microphone like this, it'll be easier for people to hear.
That fits in with my announcement before to look to the front where the TV cameras are. Are you ready for special orders? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having participated last night in a physical activity which rendered me useless for the rest of the evening, I was given to poetry, and I would like to recite for the body my statement on last night's basketball game.
Are there any
which
objections?
I have titled Ode to My Fleeting Youth.
Hearing no objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The subtitle is Lament for Days Gone By. How often do I think of it when evening lights are low? I reminisce and think back to a time not long ago. Quietly I hear the echoes, the cheers of crowds gone tame. And yes, now I must realize that sadly it's not the same. The ego was a massive giant, now gentle as a lamb. Yet none may hide from the mind's cruel tricks, which quickly get out of hand. My spirit is firm, the resolve never tighter, the mind still that of a fighter. But all of this is wasted on a wish that I could be but lighter. The memories are mine to keep, no Seahawks can invade. I only wish my legs were younger and that they had not yet turned to jade. The years slip by, the nights drag on, the days grow slow like clover, and sadly now I must admit that my youth is over.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It was nice to hear that us younger fellas got something to look forward to. But I also request permission of the floor to speak on upcoming events under threat of great bodily harm.
Are there any objections? Proceed.
The Juno Douglas Unit of the American Cancer Society requests the pleasure of everyone here at a St. Patrick's Day cocktail reception and auction at the Governor's Mansion from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday evening, the 16th of March. This is for the benefit of the American Cancer Society. There'll be a hosted bar with a green offering, and a $20 donation is asked that will be tax deductible. So if you don't have anything to do Sunday evening, I'm sure they would very much appreciate your attendance at the mansion. Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor for a brief report on Alaska resident hire.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections,
thank you, Mr.
Proceed.
Speaker. I'll be brief. In the period of leaner days and bad news, I would like to report what may be a very positive beginning. In the third week of the meetings of the Governor's Council on Alaska Hire, I was at a teleconference earlier this morning at which the people were meeting in Anchorage, and there were several things that I would like to point out. The most important thing is that we are beginning to act and dialogue like Alaskans, not as separate entities within our state. So Ohio has come through with a voluntary program which they have passed on to their contractors and will become a part of the contract. It's very strongly worded. It shows clearly the state of the companies. Their desire to, at least the express desire, to move in this direction of maximizing Alaska Hire. George Nelson reported that they've met with 20 contracting companies and the general action has been favorable. I think even more important, sometimes just people getting the message is every bit as important as any legislative effect. Recently, and right here in the News Miner that's on your desk, there is a picture of people filling in jobs, applications for jobs on the North Slope. This is being done by ARCO, and in the conference this morning, Mr. Lee Nunn indicated that the charter that had been just overheading Fairbanks will begin to stop there. But beyond just the oil industry, John Gales from the timber industry indicated that they were getting positive feedback, even though that particular industry is having a tough time. Jim Binkley in tourism, they are looking for an absolute minimum of 60 to 70% resident hire. They have been inquiring of all of their companies regard participation in this, and there is a positive note there. Gail Vick, who has been reporting on training. Finally, the industry is beginning to be aware that there have been ongoing training programs within the state. I asked a final question today of several of the union members. You know, were we just sitting here and holding each other's hands and going through show-and-tell effort, or did they feel that something positive was happening? And there was a silence, and then I asked again the same question, and I said, well, we've got to admit that we're now talking to people that over the past 2 or 3 years we haven't been talking to. So I think that in my first report as the majority member of the Governor's Council on Alaska Hire, that the direction is a positive. The major role that both Representative Pignalberry and myself on the House side, along with Commissioner Andrews, have spent is pushing the people together, making them dialogue, and making them answer each other's question. Nobody is going to get everything that they want, I feel quite sure on this, but a lot of people are getting things that they would not have got if we didn't approach this subject. So I feel that it's a positive vein. One thing, for example, food processing is indicating a strong effort, and there will be this week a hotline installed on the North Slope. And workers will know of it, and they will be free to call any complaints they have in to the Department of Labor, and they'll be free to either give their names or not give their names. And in the past, there would have been strong objection to this, and industry said we have no problem with that as long as there is some type of record that's kept, and we have an opportunity to take a look at it. So it does appear to be positive, and maybe part of the reason is because industry and the state collectively are in a period, certainly, of readjustment, and maybe we're beginning to come together and function as Alaskans with different interests instead of a bunch of school kids as we have in the past hurling insults back and forth to each other. So I'm pleased to report that there appears to be a positive direction. We're a long ways from solving the problem, but just the fact that we're interested in it and talk the subject, there is progress being made. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to take a minute to speak on interest rates, if I could.
Any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Speaker, we just voted on a letter of intent for House Bill 530, which means that the bill has passed and gone on to the governor's office, and I wanted to report. I was called this morning by Ron Lehrer of HFC. Their board authorized the HFC this morning to do a $50 million issue at 9.25%. And if you recall, we were talking about 10% loans when we passed the bill. It's now 9.25%. That compares with an FHA rate of 9.5 and a Fannie Mae rate, of 10.06%. I think that's good news for many homeowners in this state, and I just wanted to report on what the first issue is. That means loans at 9.25%. And they probably will be issuing a lot more than $50 million.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission of the floor to speak on basketball briefly.
Any objections?
But, Mr. Speaker, not all members were able to attend the basketball game last night between the legislature and the Seattle Seahawks.
I'd like to just talk briefly and offer at least my sincere thanks to those members who were brave enough to come out and show their talents. Mr. Speaker, I make note I had the opportunity of sitting behind our visitors during at least the second half of the game, and believe me, they had a great deal of respect for the talents of our legislative members. I make note that Captain Navarre played, and although, as I understand, he has a fractured arm or whatever, but he did an outstanding job, not only in playing, but in leading the team. I also make note that a member from Fairbanks was the highest scorer with some 41 points. And again, our visitors were impressed that a deliberative body of this nature, who normally not active in sports as they are, were able to at least score as many points. I believe the scores were 70 to 103. And for those of you who did not attend, believe me, the score does not tell the real story. You should have been there to watch our own fearless leader, Representative Clarkson, and doing his level best to fend off. But I tell you, when the 6'9" fella came before him, even I had to close my eyes. Mr. Speaker, please, I'd like for the body to, at this time, to give those members a round of applause for their efforts.
Representative Fox.
And the referee, the minority leader.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request the privilege of the floor to talk about local hire.
Are there any objections?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, during the past session, or during this current session, we've heard an awful lot about local hire, but have been concerned that we are aiming our verbalness and our energies to just one small part, a very small part of local hire, and that has to do with the oil industry and the North Slope. Mr. Speaker, there are thousands, literally thousands of jobs and many occupations that are being fulfilled by people who live out of state. And in order to try to get a better handle on where is the true problem of local hire, why is it that so many Alaskans are unemployed, I thought that one way of looking into this may be to see where unemployment checks are going. So I asked the department if it was possible to break down by categories and to break down by in-state and out-of-state residents where most of the unemployment checks are going and for what particular job that individual had. We asked other questions that could not be answered at this time. But what I was surprised about, sir, is that last year over 9,613 persons worked in Alaska and are currently receiving unemployment checks when they were out-of-state residents. Now, there's nothing we can do about that. We find out that if you come to Alaska, and even if you earn $1 in this state, you can get the maximum benefit of unemployment and go back to your home state, where the unemployment weekly checks would probably be just one-third, or if you're lucky, one-half. So there's a real incentive for people to come up during the summer or during the winter or whenever they can get a part-time job and then go back. But what's more important, sir, is why is it that we have so many unemployed Alaska that cannot fulfill the jobs that out-of-state people are fulfilling? Let me read some off to you. Administrative specialist, specialization. We had 191 people last year that were non-residents that took up these jobs. In the field of architecture, engineering, and surveying, we had 129 people out of state employed. In construction industry, and this has all aspects of construction, and I'm told very little with the oil fields, mostly with the big boom that we've had in Anchorage and Fairbanks, whatever, 1,535 people found jobs in Alaska. And yet at the same time, at that time, we had an unemployment rate of about 8,000 to 9,000 people unemployed. but all these people can find jobs. Why? In the electrical assembly installation, 385 people found jobs here in Alaska who are now out of state receiving unemployment checks. In excavating and grading, paving, 625 people found jobs, now living out of state for unemployment. Food and beverage preparation, 661 jobs were filled by out-of-stater. Food processing, which is basically seafood, 770 people found jobs last year, non-Alaskans. Forestry and related industry, 224 people found jobs, out-of-staters. Managers and officials, I'm not quite sure what that word means. I didn't get a better clarification on some of these job descriptions. 248 people found jobs that were out-of-staters. Mechanics, 294 people filled those jobs and now out-of-state receiving unemployment compensation. Metal fabrication, 161. Mineral extraction, this mainly means our miners, 132 people were non-residents that were employed in the state. I thought all of our miners and people were employed in the state. Professional technical manager, 212 jobs. Motor freight carriers, 320 jobs. Packaging and material handlers, 453 jobs. Religious and theology, and this one really grabbed me. I had to do more detail. 208 people who worked in the state in the field of religious and theology are now out of state collecting unemployment checks. Just, stenographers, typing, filing clerks, 383 jobs. Transportation, 162 jobs. Welders and cutters and related jobs, 192. So that's just the major portion of jobs, and I just took those that were 100 or more. People who were employed last year who took Alaskan jobs. The reason I'm going to emphasize this is that I think we're beating a small pony over the head. When we talk about the oil industry, you're talking about maybe 200 jobs, 300 jobs at the most that are up there. In the meantime, we're losing 9,613 jobs that were taken from Alaskans last year. What is the problem? Well, I hope, and they said it's going to cost about $10,000 or $15,000 to do this. Can we zero in to see, well, who's employing? Is it union, non-union employers? Is it government, non-government worker? What aspects of private industries are employing these people? And why is it that our job service, our Department of Labor, has not seen this before and tell people, hey, these are the greatest possibilities of you to be employed in this state? We know because these are the major jobs that out-of-staters are getting. You want to be employed? Go here, go there. But we don't know where to send them. Now, hopefully, the department will be able to break this down. Is it local government filling up these jobs? State government filling in these jobs with out-of-staters? I must admit, I'm not really against people who come from out-of-state and want to find a job. I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to work wherever they can and get a job, and if they want to stay here, fine, wonderful. That increases the betterment of our communities. But I'm saying that something is wrong with the system if we have so many thousands of people unemployed in this state and yet 10,000 people coming in and able to find jobs. Why can't we put them where the jobs are? Can we direct our community colleges better to train these people in these works where we know it's available? Can we do a better job with the job service department and saying, hey, get a better handle. Look at these employers who seem to be hiring mostly out-of-staters. Don't threaten them, but work with them. And say, look, if you come to us, if you work with us, we can be sure that you can get filing clerks. You can get excavating people. It seems to be a big vacuum that we're losing, and I think we ought to change our direction, sir, through the Labor and Commerce Committee or with the representative that just spoke on this special task force, and look at the major problem since we now have what I consider the modern moderate problem solved. Look at the major problem of 10,000 jobs. Thank you.
Any further special orders? Representative Clucks.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask for unanimous consent. The House stand in adjournment until Monday at 11 a.m.
Any objections? 11 a.m. Monday.